you, there's two things here that I think is being confused. The operating system of the radio being controlled by a floating DSP processor is different from the transmission conversions going in that radio. Two different things. Roy, do you want to step on that or should I back off?
Well, George, again, not quite sure what the point of any of this is. Software-defined radios, primarily the whole thing really amounts primarily to the receiver circuit. You want to have a battle of wits between transmitters and receivers? I don't understand what we're going to.
No, the control operation of the radio versus the actual transmission stages that the radio goes through. I don't mean transmit. Transmission, receive, and transmit is both. The actual signal conversion signals versus how the radio operates. These were two different stages in development of ham radio equipment, and they were utilizing what was going on, and I'll go back within commercial communication systems, which were doing it 40, 50 years before. However, if you look at it and you say, I have a digital radio, you could have a digital radio in 1970, in 1980, in 1990. But if you want a software-defined transmission conversion radio, you're going to go back to about 6 years ago.
Well, I would tend to disagree with you. Basically, because I've had the software-defined radio for about 9 years. So unless I have a time machine, and this is not Flex Radio's first design. Before that, they had the 3000 and the 1500. That was for about 5-6 years. The first time that QST ran an article about software-defined radios, I think was 1998. The guy who owns Flex Radio gave it out as a design and offered it as a kit. And some people built it. Again, that was only in the amateur radio field. The military had the technology and spent millions and millions of dollars long before, because primarily it requires very sophisticated analog to digital converting chips that had very wide bandwidth that could take a significant portion of the RF spectrum. Now, that's not the same as a computer-controlled radio. They have nothing to do with each other for the most part. You can have a legacy radio that is completely computer-controlled. Computer-controlled is not the same as computer-defined, and computer-defined has been available to hams for probably about 20 years.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
Yeah, 20 years ago, digital sampling was still handing to IF stages.
Yes, the early software-defined radios took the signal off of the IF stage, again, because the digital to analog converting silicon was not up to the bandwidth of anything wired. But as each generation moved on, they went closer and closer to the front end. And the 6000 series, which came out about 10 years ago, was a direct from the front end digital sampling design.
No, it was only about 6 or 7 years ago that true digital sampling became available in ham radio equipment. It was not 20 years ago, Roy. Please understand this. It was still IF stage.
C2GX. George, you got to listen to me closely. I said for the military, it was 20 years ago because they could afford a lot more expensive silicon. For amateur radio operators, it started off 20 years ago with QST article. You can pull the article yourself, and it started with using a much more narrow RF field, and over time and technology, as silicon got better and better, the RF range got wider and wider. And I don't know what to tell you. You're telling me that the 2 years that I owned my 6700, I didn't, that I hallucinated that. I don't know what to tell you about that. I don't think I hallucinated.
I don't think you really understand the technology of that radio.
And you're perfectly free to think that. Yes, Wesley?
In some way, I'm kind of confused. Software defines radio as ER is the radio communication system where components are traditionally implemented in the hardware, mixers, filters and amplifiers, modulators, demodulators, detectors. So if I was to start from the music standpoint, then I would say that in 1980 there was the digital standards or the mark point that could mark the technology launch. Let me jump. So in 1980s, it was late 1980s, the digital radio technology was introduced to the European countries. Again, in 1969, the Peter Zinnenhof developed the first digital sampler, and it was for music. So that was the CMI synthesizer launched in 1979. The nature of the confusion comes from the point that we should specify what we take as a data for digitizing. Are we operating in low frequency or are we operating in a high frequency, radio frequency whatsoever? Now, when I go back to the SDR history, then we have a Rote Urlich, February 26, 28, and that's 1985, digital HF radio, a sampling technique, the third traditional conference of HF. That was when there was the birth of software-defined radio. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, but I don't really understand the point. As I mentioned, it was very limited to people in general at the very beginning because the bandwidth of the converting circuitry was very primitive. And at the very first, the people had the money for the very high-end silicon were military and industrial uses. Eventually, the silicon got cheaper and faster and better, and more and more amateurs played around with it for a subset of the RF, using IF, outputs as the means, but digitize them and process them the way SDRs do. And over the years, with better silicon, it's moved closer and closer to the front end, as I said. So I don't know how this disagrees with what I said.
Now, look, what I was trying to find is the point where we could say that whether we're talking about the SDR or we're talking about digital sampling, because that was the confusion. And those are different dates in history facts that are responsible for it. But then, maybe I didn't hear properly, or I didn't listen properly, I'm sorry. But I didn't see the description of software-defined radio in terms of sampling. Let me show. So superheterodyne receivers use a variable frequency oscillator, meter, mixer, and filter to tune to the desired signal to the common immediate frequency or baseband. So the typical SDR signal is then sampled by the analog to digital converter. But I think some applications are not necessary to tune the signal to the immediate frequency. To tune the signal to the immediate frequency, and the radio frequency signal is directly sampled by analog digital converter after amplification. So it looks like when we're dealing with the low frequency, the the audible sounds, that were the most of the processes being made, but I'm not sure, Dr. Roy, you know it better. So the real analog to digital converters lacks the dynamic range to pick up the sub-volt or nanowatt power radio signals. That's my assumption, let me just. So the low noise amplifier must precede the conversion step, and the device introduces its own problems. So if I would to give some examples, the spurious signals that are present, and that's kind of typical, those complete with the desired signals with the amplifier dynamic range. And that may introduce distortion in desired signals or may block them completely. I would love for Dr. Roy if you tell me a little bit more about it. I think that the solution for it is to put bandpass filters between the antenna and amplifier. But back to you, educate me.
C2GM. Okay, Wesley. I mentioned this before. Present best design that I know of for a software-defined radio still has an analog front end. It still has a RF selector, so it has filtering of the RF. It also has an RF amplifying circuit, so that it feeds enough of a signal directly to the analog to digital converter. So you got the front end of selectivity and sensitivity and amplification that feeds into a rather expensive analog to digital converter that has a dynamic range and bandwidth so that it can take enough sampling rates to fill up the entire RF range that it's working with. It then it takes the digital code, it works them into both I and Q phase signals, and then uses computer algorithms to computationally massage the bits in any way that it wants to. It can produce filters, it can produce modulators and demodulators and filtration systems, all kinds of fun stuff. But still need a front end to just kind of take care and clean up the antenna signal. So that's already built into the design. Earlier designs didn't use a converter at that far or at that close to the antenna. Originally, it was somewhere in the IF circuit that they first sampled out a much smaller frequency range because it required less expensive silicon, and then they did their magic on the IF with a much narrower band range. So the modern software-defined radios are capable of sampling throughout the HF frequency range. I can sit there on my screen and look at the HF band from 180 meters to 10 meters if I so wish.
And Y2H?
And the last question is, how low you can go? As you know, I'm mostly interested in very low frequencies, 10 kilohertz and up.
And Y2H?
Yes, Bluebird.
KG2RY?
Yes, okay, David recognized. Lou, you first that I heard want to make a comment.
Okay, so there's a program called New Radio, GNU, you know, new, not new, Unix. I've used it. I did some experiments with the club a couple years ago. And in fact, I have it up on YouTube. The club has a YouTube channel now. I implore people to subscribe. Do a search on LIMARC on YouTube, and you'll see our logo, and that's the one. There's a couple of different LIMARC entities, but you'll know us. And look for the time delay of arrival experiment. And I illustrate, part of it is I'm illustrating using the new radio, which basically is a bunch of software modules. And I've taken a signal off the air, and you'll see how it splits the I's and the Q's. It makes floating point numbers out of them. You know, they're binary. They're really bytes. So you split the byte stream, the I's and the Q's. You convert them to floats, and then you join them into a complex number. And you have little building blocks with demodulators, any kind of demodulator you want, et cetera, and you can bring it out to sound. This was just part of bringing this time delay of arrival experiment for direction finding. But it's up there on YouTube on the Limark channel, so check it out. And you'll see what we're talking about, that the software-defined radio, as Wesley said, it's taking the hardware and substituting it for software. You don't need that hardware anymore.
Well, very good, Lou. I'll have to check that out. I mean, there have been a lot of little different ways of approaching software-defined radios. There's something called a Taylor detector that actually decodes the I and the Q signal from the original RF, and that gets this digitized, then they do mathematical algorithms, and they're able to do all kinds of amazing stuff. So I got to check that out. Software-defined radios is to me interesting, and the way that it does things is different. The idea of how filters work, unfortunately, has nothing closely to do with how legacy filters, mechanical filters, work. But it's sort of interesting to look into it. So if people are interested, there's loads of source material on software-defined radio.
And let me see if I have it. Yeah, by the way, if you watch it, it was really a video with a postscript. So you got to stay till the end. Because as this was being developed, and we used MATLAB program to do a lot of the analysis, et cetera. But as we were developing this, we took it step by step. We used SDR dongles for receivers, and the first sets that we had was superseded by much more accurate clocked SDRs, and when we put them in, et cetera. Ultimately, the bottom line was we had three receivers at the end of the experiment. We had people go out in a mobile unit, blind to the experimenter, which was me. I had to figure out where they were, and the results were phenomenal. We were with the high RF environment. But you get a reliability score also with the calculations, so you know which ones you can trust and which ones you can't. So basically, what this is it's the speed of light, how radio waves travel. And we compute based on the delay, which is only in microseconds, position. So take a look at that video. Maybe we can talk about it next week.
Okay, I'd love to do that. Like I said, it's fascinating stuff. Technology just gets weirder and weirder and more interesting and more interesting. So thank you, Lou. Going off to Wesley, I can go all the way down to 100,000 hertz, my SDR.
And I can go with my 1,000 Kosterman PSM-139 hertz as a receiver from 1 hertz, 32 megahertz, and to XGN.
KG2RY listening.
David, recognize. I just want to finish off with Wesley. Actually, I can wind this down. I don't know what the sensitivity is, which is very important. But as far as controls go, I could set this down to 1 hertz. It would be interesting to know if there's anything out there, but theoretically, it displays to 1 hertz. I don't remember the specs. It's kind of easy to kind of just do a Google search and look up the specs for the 6700 of how low it can possibly go.
Oh, that's great. I have the filters. The most narrow one is 40 hertz, passband filter, and could you please just tell me how filtering works in your radio? I might not be giving you a smart question, I'm sorry.
Well, Well, it's kind of nice and flexible. You can set any range that you want. You could set the slope for any level that you want. You could set a straight skirt, or you can have it gradually improve. And it's a GUI interface. So you just grab onto it, and you could make it any number of hertz that you want.
You would love to hear more about it, but I believe there are people waiting in line. And also, Lou, if you can add your 5 cents, I would love to hear that about the passband filter, if I use the proper terminology for the SDR.
Are you talking to me?
Well, anybody, I was asking Lou, but anybody, if you have more information about the question that I asked.
I have some questions. First of all, SDR radio, it's great. I'm sure it's great. Cost a lot of money. Good SDR radio cost a lot of money. Is it better than any other kind of radio? Maybe the difference is, you know, between one radio and another and another and another. You know, when digital came out and they were making MP3s, it sounded kind of tinny, and the digital sound was, well, wow, it's digital, but, like, is it better? Is it really better?
Well, software-defined radios come in all shapes and sizes. You could buy, I think Lou was talking about SDR dongles. There's a bunch of them out there, but one of the big ones, very popular, that are used are the RTL SDRs. They were designed originally for European television tuners, but the chipset was kind of repurposed, and you could buy a dongle SDR for about $30, $40. Trouble is, it's sort of designed for microwave, UHF, VHF, again, because it was designed for television signals way back when. True, you can spend $7,500 for the high-end software-defined radios, but ICOM sells a 7300, which is really a software-defined radio. Yaesu has a whole bunch of new software-defined radios. Again, I think the technology is only going to improve. Can you do magic things with it that you can't do with a legacy? Well, to a degree, but probably not. That's going to impress anyone who has a legacy. The filters, again, I guess theoretically you could jam on digital signal processing filters after the fact, but for all intents and purposes, the amount of low distortion that a software-defined radio capable device is kind of a better spec. And again, you know, a firmware update can kind of revolutionize the feature set of a software-defined radio, whereas a firmware upgrade on your legacy radio is just going to be for bug improvements and such. So, you know, a lot of people don't need a software-defined radio. A lot of people don't want a software-defined radio. That's fine. That's wonderful. I think to a degree, ultimately, that's the future, because it's going to be able to be reduced to less expensive silicon over time, so it's going to be cost-effective and give you better specs. Again, you can look at all the major manufacturers, and a lot of them are kind of obscuring the fact that their radios are mostly software-defined radios.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
But the question is it better?
Again, it's in the eye of the beholder. There are features that you cannot get in a legacy radio that you can get in a software-defined radio. If that is better or worse or the same or immaterial is up to the individual. I like my pan adapter. I like the visual control. I like the ability to cram 8 different virtual receivers. A lot of people wouldn't want any of that. They like to listen and twirl the dial and listen for a signal, and if that's what they like, then so be it. So better is one of those terrible terms that Do they give you good specs? Well, again, look at the Sherwood receiver list. Yeah, they give you good specs, software-defined radios. But I mean, some legacy radios give you good specs as well.
That and the good quality audio. You know, some radios have exceptional audio. Other radios, just okay, you know. And I'm wondering, does SDR have exceptional audio, or is it just okay?
Well, I guess ultimately it has more to do with your settings and the audio amplification circuits and the way that it delivers it. My radio doesn't even have a speaker. It outputs the audio to computers, and my computer gives me the audio. It does have a jack for it, so you could use headphones, but it does not have an internal speaker. And it has a built-in, I think it's an eight slice graphic equalizer. You could run all kinds of emphasis and enhancing and compression and, compounding software in a computer and tweak the audio to your heart's content.
KD2FIU.
That's a Collins Type IF crystal filter.
I'm sorry, David, you doubled with George. We'll get to you, George. So I didn't hear. You mentioned something about a Collins mechanical filter.
Yeah, you know, mechanical audio. It's like, you know, we had records were analog. And then there was CDs. Pretty good quality, but not even close. And then MP3s, you know, that was kind of like a joke, but everybody took it seriously. So the advancement of digital technology, is it better or, you know, is it just okay?
Again, the problem is the term better. I mean, that's a very, very subjective kind of a assessment to something. As I mentioned before, other than using headphones, all the audio from my particular SDR is digitized and it is re-encoded as an audio signal in either computers or my iPad is capable of doing that as well. And so it's as good as any digital audio signal. I can't exactly tell you how many bits because I don't remember what the audio stream is encoded at, but certainly I have no problems with it. I can listen to FM and it sounds fine to me personally.
QSL, yeah. I think you can get good quality audio from a radio if, you know, you set it up the right way, but the output from a communications transceiver audio would be what, from 300 to 3,000 hertz?
Well, once again, it sort of depends upon the radio. My flex is adjustable. I can change the bandwidth that I'm transmitting to as narrow as, you know, 1.6, or ridiculously extended single sideband to 6 kilohertz. So it's up to me. I set it at the standard, which is about 2.7, as most people do, but it's capable of adjusting on the fly. You don't have to open a box and turn a screw or anything. You just slide it on your computer screen.
Do you have ease of communication when you make a contact, say you're calling some DX station, you know, and you're having some kind of very nice, relaxed conversation? Does your radio give you that, or is it more like, you know, stressed out, I have to make this adjustment?
No, I don't feel any stress whatsoever. I'll tweak the gain a little bit. I'll adjust the volume a little bit maybe, but otherwise it's a very low fatigue radio, at least from my perspective.
QSL, sounds good. You know, in the last 7 days I worked four ZS South African stations, I don't know how it happened, you know, or even why. We were talking about rag chewing DX. They had all these very old radios. It was all very interesting, I think.
Oh, that's good. I grew up in the same era that most people listening tonight. I lusted after a Collins Systems radio. I would soothe myself to sleep instead of counting sheep by tuning the Pi network of a Collins transmitter in my head, and that's how I went to sleep. So, you know, I can appreciate the old equipment. I don't have room for too much extra equipment. I basically have two base station radios in my shack and nothing more, and I get by with it. And but, you know, I don't want to have anyone get the idea that I think legacy radios are worthless and shouldn't be. I just am interested in technology that amateur radio operators haven't really kind of thought about as much as they have the legacy radios. Legacy radios have been around and used by us for so many years that many people kind of have a very easy relationship with how they work. Software-defined radios don't quite work that way, so that's what interests me personally. But, you know, different strokes for different folks.
USL Roy, what interests me are like these very inexpensive radios and big experiences, you know? I guess they call it minimal ham radio.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there are so many different ways to appreciate this hobby. And, you know, there are QRP people, there are QRP people, there are low cost, there are guys that take a great deal of pride in that they built all their equipment themselves. And, you know, you take pride and take pleasure where you want to. I understand that totally.
Thank you, Roy.
Thank you, David. George, you wanted to make a comment. I guess George has stepped away. Any other comments on the subject? Please, hit that push to talk button.
KD2, WOT. Good evening.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, the SDR, of course, is, built upon very high-speed computational power. And, as that has increased the availability and the ability of the software-defined radio has certainly improved. Mathematically, of course, it's the FFT, or the fast Fourier transform.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George, recognize, just with finishing up with Chris. There's usually, when for the most part, the early design software-defined radios needed a great deal of computational capability. Some of them went with an Intel type of chip, but a lot of them went with something called a field programmable gate array chip, which is sort of a hardware programmable central processor where you can change the settings of the chip itself to optimize the efficiency of whatever floating point operation that you want to do. So my 6700 had two field programmable gate arrays. I think I once looked it up in sampling numbers. The darn things, I think, went for something like 1200 or 1500 apiece. So the silicon, to even processing, once you get around the analog to digital conversion, required a lot of silicon and a lot of power.
USL.
Okay, very good. George, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I'd like everybody to keep in mind, this is KD2FIU, keep in mind that digital sampling for the transmission signal is different from the digital operations of the radio's microprocessor to give you the features the radio can perform. the transmission capabilities of digital sampling are not really, let me put this this way. You can convert from analog to digital, but remember your radio is converting to electronic signals. To bring it into a digital signal to go in to a digital bus. The digital bus itself has a speed. It's not just the fact that you say, I have a digital radio. People got to understand that when you have a radio that is like a 7300, which has a digital bus going into IF sampling buses, it's different from a purely digital sampling radio. It doesn't matter yet what digital processor is being used to give you the features that run the radio. Roy, are we on the same speed with this?
I thought so, I think so, but I'm not sure. We talked about this earlier, that there is a complete difference between a computer-controlled radio or a radio that's run by a digital a processor, little microcomputer, something like runs other things. Microprocessor runs, can run an analog radio, can run a digital, can run a software-defined radio. So software-controlled or microprocessor-operated radios can either be legacy analog or software-defined. Software-defined radio simply means that at some point or other, the signal is translated from a analog RF to a digital mode, and then all of the later processing is done in the digital world. It's not turned into analog until the very end, say, when it's feeding an analog audio signal out.
Thank you, Roy. And this is where I was going with that. I'm glad we got that through. A lot of people understand that if they have this digital radio, everything is all digital. It's not. The transmission speed and the transmission busing is dependent upon sampling in a software-defined radio. So if you're going to have the sampling to occur, you also have to have the operating system to control it. So we can't just say because sampling occurs, you're going to have all the features.
Yeah.
I hope that I never gave anyone the impression. Matter of fact, I remember at least two times saying the same thing about how updated firmware with a sophisticated computer system is required to digitally manipulate these bits into useful form. So, yeah, just having a digital stream by itself isn't going to get you anywhere. You now have to be able to manipulate it, and MyPlex has two field programmable gate array chips to do it. Others use an Intel chip, but you need something with significant processing power as well. So I think we're in agreement. I think we've always been in agreement with that.
Interesting.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, to be honest, I never went deep into it. So the previous comment was that Fourier transform is the base for ATR radio, which kind of makes me protest. But I would love to be straightened out. The Fourier transform is a fundamental concept when it comes to the digital signal processing DSP. So the software defined radios, it is a key beat and math behind the RF waterfall spectrum that displays frequency section features used on the SDR software. So in the basic terms, all of the Fourier transform does, it takes a signal for the example RF, signal from the antenna, or the sound sample, and break it down into the component of the frequencies, but for the reason of the waterfall. And that's what it ends. So this allows you to see each individual frequency spike in the RF waterfall spectrum display in the programs like SDR from the mesh of the signals that derive to the antenna. So that's what I'm protesting with, that the Fourier transform is just taking care of the waterfall with it. The sampling is not necessarily the Fourier transform treatment. And the DSP is not SDR. DSP is just a signal processing. N2X3.
NY2H?
Yeah, the waterfall has nothing to do with it. It's an after effect of the signal being digitally sampled.
NY2H?
Yes, this is AC2GS, and Lou recognized. I'll give it over to you, Lou, in 1 second. The Fourier transform, the fast Fourier transform, is used for the pan adapter and spectrum analysis. It is not used for the demodulation, it is not used for the filtering, it's not used for a bunch of other things. The computer has to crunch the ADC, the analog to digital converter, puts out a digital stream. The digital stream then breaks it into an I and a Q digital stream, and the computer does a whole bunch of algorithmic operations on the IQ bit streams to generate the demodulation and the filter systems and such. So it's not primarily a fast Fourier transform machine. It's one of the many things that you have to do in order to get the pan adapter to display the way it does. Lou, please.
Well, you just about said everything I was going to say. Yeah. So, you know, you can think of, we're sampling an RF stream. What's an RF stream coming in, right? If you're fast enough, you know, it's like the Nyquist, if you're fast enough, basically you're just getting levels, discrete levels, and you're getting them serially, so you're getting them in the time domain. But once you do the processing, you know, as you say, to get it to pan adapter, you go from time domain to frequency domain, FFT, fast Fourier transform. Yes, Wesley, DSP is involved. The field programmable gate arrays are programmed to do these magical mathematical transforms. It's really evident in the term. A software-controlled radio, you're controlling by software like you can control your door locks on your car. A software-defined radio is defining the radio. You don't have a detector in it. You have software doing that job. So it's as simple as that, as Wesley would say. Back to Ned.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I have this problem since the first time that I ever discussed software-defined radios. People tend to like to merge software-controlled radio with a software-defined radio, and I keep trying to split it in half. I would never use, by the way, you've never heard me call this a digital radio, because in my mind, the digital radio is a completely different thing. It's a radio that operates by, you know, digital voice mode, digital data mode. That's not what this is. This is a software-defined radio. And digital signal processing usually is designed more for audio frequency range operations than for radio frequency. So, for the most part, I mean, you could use it earlier on in the chain of a legacy radio. But so they're all kind of separate components. They can operate together. They can operate despite, you know, without one or the other. So it's an interesting field, but it can get kind of complicated, especially if you start to use kind of vague terms like a digital radio. So I would stay completely away from calling any of this a digital radio.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
This is what I said 40 minutes ago. The operation and control of the microprocessor and the operating system is different from the actual sampling system of the RF frequency. So if you're sampling the RF frequency and you're now passing it to the digital control of the radio, you have many features. But keep in mind, it's going to be brought back to analog stages. I said this 40 minutes ago.
Well, again, that's neither here nor there. It's going to be brought back to analog stages at the very end of the chain in the analog amplifier. That's where it's in analog mode. Up until the analog audio amplifier, you're still dealing in the digital mode. And you know, the fact that it has a microprocessor that's controlling the operation is all well and good, but again, legacy analog devices also are microprocessor controlled as well. So again, I don't think that really factors into the discussion of a software-defined radio.
So you know how you generate the I's and the Q's?
Well, in the bad old days, you used something like a payload detector, but nowadays there's an algorithm that seems to generate a cue from the I stream.
It's called framing.
Well, what you could do, if you want to use discrete hardware, is you can get two oscillators, and just like we have in our traditional radios, local oscillators. So you'd have at the same frequency, but you'd have 190 degrees out of phase. And then when you heterodyne with the signal coming in, those products will be 90 degrees out of phase. And you got to think 90 degrees out of phase is interesting. You can't just, you know, whatever the complex frequencies are. So if you have a, you know, I don't know, say you have a 100 megahertz signal there, you know, 90 degrees out of phase is going to be a certain amount of time. It's going to be a quarter of that cycle at that frequency. But then if you have 150 on that, that 90 degrees is a separate thing in time. So it's not just a time shift, it's a phase shift. And one way to mechanically do that is to have a heterodyne with two oscillators, which are 90 degrees out of phase.
And one creates an odd bit to be sampled to see if they're out of phase.
I wasn't sure if that was a double, because as soon as I let up on the mic, I heard you.
One of those oscillators creates an odd bit to make sure they're not out of phase and causes a correction between the phases.
Okay, I mean, my understanding was that I didn't go into detail, unfortunately, and I probably should have, that there's a way for them to just digitize the RF into an I signal, and somehow they can synthesize a cue just by manipulating the bit stream. So I'll have to look further into that. What kind of manipulation they use.
KD2FIU, Roy, it's called super framing. I was part of the development of it.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah, I mean, that's critical. You know, when you get IQ, you now you're working with complex, so you have an imaginary part. And that allows you to reconstruct a lot of things. It's kind of like having two perspectives on the same thing, so it's really powerful.
Yeah, it's sort of fascinating to kind of read these people how just manipulating those two data streams, you can arrange it to demodulate an FM signal, or you can demodulate it to a single sideband signal, or an amplitude modulated signal, or probably a quadrature amplitude signal. It's just using the proper algorithms just with the I and the Q string. So it's sort of fascinating. I don't think there was a lot of stuff written on that type of technology before software-defined radios, because there was nothing much you could do with that information at that point. Anyway, there are a couple of good books out there on software-defined radios. If you're interested, you can Google the subject. There's a lot of stuff written about it. I think it's the technology of the future, personally. And, you know, once again, if you take a look at the new models from Yaesu, ICOM and such, you see that little by little, they're going software-defined radio. And, you know, hopefully, as time goes on and silicon gets better, the cost of these things will go down, 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 and the form factors will shrink as well. So I think it's a good sign for the future. I mean, there are other technologies that the military is working with that's very expensive that may kind of eventually come down in price so that commercial manufacturers and amateur radio operators can play with that technology as well. Technology is always good.
VDH with a question.
Yes, John.
In your Flex system, do you have the ability to actually pull out the software that's doing the demodulation, or if you wanted to have access to the codes where if you wanted to write some of your own software and insert it, does it give you that option, or is that kept by the company? Go ahead.
It is very much kept by the company. I think the history of Flex Radio, they released their original operating software to the general public, and everyone used it to leverage their own commercial designs and make money. So it upset, I think, Flex Radio, and nothing that they put out is kind of for the general public. Matter of fact, at one point or another, my radio's firmware, the secure card, became corrupt, and I couldn't even download firmware. They had to mail me a encrypted secure SD card to put into my machine to get it to boot again. The detection and demodulation software is not really simple. It's designed for the field programmable gate array devices that are an art unto themselves, and they don't give you access to any of that information. So unfortunately, although for a period of time they were offering a tool kit for modulator demodulators, so if you wanted to design the free digital voice codec, you could write code for that specific thing. So for a time, they stopped doing that, unfortunately, but for a time, they did have a modulator-demodulator plug-in toolkit.
I see. Okay, thanks, Larry. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I've occasionally looked up these field-programmable gate arrays, and it's another world. You know, it's not quite like writing anything for an Intel chip, so... My understanding is that there's not a lot of people with that expertise, so it probably adds to the expense of the company in developing new firmware. They've been very, very sluggish. You sort of think that the last few years, software programmables very often will work at home. So this would be an opportunity to hire someone and get some nice firmware, but they didn't do anything the last few years, unfortunately.
KD2FIU. If that was a whole plot of expertise out there, could be writing software that that's out there that you could just write in the radio and be off and running.
I would agree with you. And matter of fact, in some ways, the older Flex radios that use open software have greater capability. They do diversity reception much better. And they have lots of little features because there's one obsessive compulsive fan who apparently spends way too much of his free time coding for that, for the Flex 3000 and 1500 series, which is the previous version where the software was open. It would be nice if they opened it, although, as I mentioned, they have the open libraries for the modulator-demodulator, and they got no traction. No one wrote anything, as far as I'm aware. So after a while, they decided that it was just costing them money to maintain something that wasn't really used down, unfortunately.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
field programmable gate array may be different from one radio manufacturer to the next. They may be using an 8-bit word. They may be using a 16-bit word. They may be using overhead in the first bit, 16-bit overhead in the 7th and 9th bit. We don't know. So if you're trying to get software for it, it's going to be exclusive to each radio manufacturer.
Well, yes, George. The industry of field programmable gate arrays is not the same as the generic Intel or RISC chip sets. And so they don't make that many of them. They're relatively expensive, and you need expertise with that particular company's line of field programmable gate arrays in order to squeeze the most out of it. So, yeah. It's not a generic component by far.
Yes, and that's where they got us. Very good, KD2FIU. Thank you, Roy.
Well, I knew that coming in. That was one of the supposed benefits of this radio, that its processing power was significantly better than any Intel standard operating multi-core chip. So that's the price that you pay. You take your chances. Again, if I had it to do all over again, I would. It's been a bumpy road, but it's been a fun road, and I get a lot of enjoyment out of my radio, which is the point of the exercise. It certainly should be for all of us. So what can I tell you? It's a good radio. It has its problems. The people there are very good. Customer relations is excellent. But I wish they would put more money and time into firmware development and add more features. But, you know, everyone wants more.
AG2RY?
Yes, David.
You know what I got out of this conversation? Sometime in the future, when the technology has reached its peak, you know, it doesn't get any better, doesn't get any more sophisticated, doesn't get any more expensive, you know, people will be able to communicate without a ham radio transceiver. They just talk to each other.
Well, there's a term for that. It's called the cognitive radio, and that's what I was alluding with as far as the military is playing around with a device that's so sophisticated that all you have to do is indicate who you want to talk to, and it acts as the middleman, and all of a sudden you're talking to whoever it is anywhere, anytime. So that's cognitive radio technology.
QSL. But I'm saying you can do that without even having a transceiver, you know, without the electronics, without the digital technology. People just talk to each other.
And what would you suggest is the mode of this communication?
Presence.
Well, but you're going to need some kind of field excitation going on.
Well, you know, you got to start somewhere. I guess people are having a good time playing with their computers and stuff, you know. Other people are searching for the best possible receive audio on a transceiver from inexpensive pods and inexpensive devices. You know, maybe that's where it begins. You know, when you start to see things from a different point of view, maybe a lot of people will see it from a point of view of engineering, technology. Okay, what about looking at it more creatively and saying, artistically, you know, this could take place?
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. I tend to sort of disagree, though. Earlier you mentioned that things get better and then the price goes higher. I think that's not usually how things tend to work. As things get better, you end up getting more features for less money. Things hopefully will become less expensive, smaller, lighter, more efficient, less power requirements, sort of what has given us whatever it is that the Baofeng handy-talkie is to many people. An inexpensive entry to the